So welcome to Elaine's Literary Salon. I'm Jeff Higgins. This is my wife Cynthia's in my restaurant. It's Alexandrian cuisine. It's based on our family recipes from Alexandria, Egypt. So thank you all for eating. It's what keeps us in business so we can offer these events to authors. We've turned this Elaine's into a literary salon. We're a hub for writers in the D.C. area. We're number one on Spotify, and we're number three on Apple for literary salons. Please go to elainesliterarysalon.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, get notified when we're doing these events. We're doing multiple events a week, usually at least one. I'm excited about today. It should be a lot of fun. Wanda Rawlings is an award-winning Christian fiction author, Bible teacher, and speaker who is passionate about encouraging others to grow in faith and discover God's purpose for their lives. After serving 36 years as a civilian federal employee, Wanda stepped fully into her calling to write, teach, and minister through storytelling and discipleship. She is the author of the inspiring three-book Christian fiction series, A Christian Journey, which includes Chloe's Missing Piece, Chloe's Season of Storms, and Chloe's Journey to Joy. Through relatable characters and faith-centered themes, Wanda's books explore spiritual searching, perseverance through trials, and the joy that comes from trusting God through every season of life. Wanda's work has received national recognition. She's the recipient of the 2025 BookFest Award for Chloe's Missing Piece and has always been honored with the International Christian Book Award, recognizing the impact of her faith-based storytelling and message of hope. Beyond writing, Wanda is the creator and leader of the Root of the Matter Virtual Women's Bible Study, an ongoing ministry that has been equipping women with biblical truth for several years. She also writes devotionals, teaches Bible studies, and speaks at conferences and events, encouraging audiences to walk boldly in faith and live with kingdom purpose. Through her books, teachings, and speaking engagements, Wanda Rawlings continues to uplift, inspire, and encourage readers and listeners to trust God's plan and embrace the journey of faith. Wanda, welcome to Elaine's Literary Salon.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I'm happy to be here.
Closer. There we go.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. First off, why don't you tell us about this latest Chloe's Missing Piece, your latest in this series.
So actually, Chloe's Missing Piece is the first in the series. It was written about two, three years ago. It was the first book in the series, and it's all about a young woman who really is right fresh out of college, and she's doing really well in her life. She has an amazing job and family, and life is good for her, or so she thinks, yet she still has this tug on her that something is missing, and she's not quite sure exactly what it is. And so she goes through this journey trying to figure out what it is that's missing. Why does she keep having this feeling that something is missing when she thought that she had everything together, that she had done everything according to her plan? And so she had to find out that it wasn't about all of the things that she was doing. It was about her relationship with God, and that is what was missing.
So what is the age range that you're shooting for with these books?
So I want to start as early as high school, 10th, 11th, 12th graders. And I think it would be really amazing for all women older than that as well, because we've all been in a situation in life where we felt like something was missing and we weren't sure what it was. You know, we've always been looking for some type of identity and, you know, our purpose and the things that matter to us that, you know, and we don't know where to find it. We're just sort of lost. And so we sort of go through life and through this journey looking for what's missing, or what our part is in life, what our purpose is in life. And when we do that, sometimes we find it, you know, in Christ. Sometimes we never find it. And so I think that this book here is a great way for women who don't know, who's searching for something, you know, who's going to church and feeling like something is still missing because they don't have a relationship with God. They just have a church life. They just have, you know, religion. They just go to church every Sunday. And so I think this book is not just for women. I think that if you catch women girls in high school at that age, that, you know, the journey might be a little easier, or at least more meaningful if they have the journey figured out earlier.
I mean, these are big concepts, right? Like purpose in life. How do you determine like what would be purpose in life? Is it the individual's satisfaction from doing things that feel right to them, or is it recognition from the community? Or is it adherence to like a doctrine or theology? You know what I mean? Like how like the sort of this Aristotelian sort of telos, right? Of purpose. When you say purpose, like you say, sometimes you never find it. How do you know with what you're doing, even if it's making you happy, is actually purpose? That's an easy question. Just take the rest of our time.
So I think your purpose is inside you. It's already there. I believe that it's something that you're born with, you know, and you, as you take the time to figure out what it is, we all start out the same, right? We go to school, elementary school, middle school, high school, some go on to college. And a lot of times you go through all of that and you still have no idea what it is that you want to do. And so I think that taking the time to know within yourself, to reach inside and find out what that is that's missing, what it is that, for me, I believe what God is calling you to do. You know, I mean, I think that we were all created in His image. You know, He is the creator, and I believe, for me, and I think that He is going to be the one to decide and determine what He created you for. And I think that He shows that to you at some point, if you're listening, if you're paying attention. And that's what Chloe was going through. She kept feeling this nudge, this void. She wasn't sure what it was, but she knew it was there, right? And I think that we all kind of go through a period in time where we're not quite sure. We're searching, you know, for the right career. We're searching for the right type of lifestyle that we think we're supposed to live. And I think that as we go through life, we eventually, you know, we find that missing piece. We are able to put the pieces together and live a great life because this is what we were meant to do. And it's not always very apparent or evident immediately. It's something that you have to journey through. And you know, sometimes you have to make mistakes, you know, and go to the left and go to the right and then, you know, figure out, okay, I need to backtrack because that didn't work. And I mean, it's a process, you know. This whole process of life is not something that's tailor-made, you know, for anybody. Everybody's way is different. And so we have to figure out what that is. And I think that in faith, God is showing you. He's putting things in your path. He's putting people in your path. You just have to be able to understand that that's what's happening. And so she didn't quite know what it was, but she found others to ask the question so they could help her identify, you know, who she was and what this thing was that kept, you know, touching her, that she wasn't quite sure what it was. And so she had to put herself in a position to hear from God. And, you know, she could only do that when she met the right people, when she surrounded herself with the right people to show her how to do that.
So when you say, like, you know, the purpose is within you, you know, to begin with, is there like a theological underpinning to like individualized purpose, or is it more like humans should live the good life, you know, according to these principles? Because you teach Bible studies. Is there actual like direction in that points to the individual as having like the unique purpose? Because like you say, we all have different talents and, you know, everyone's different.
Right. So everyone is different. So there's no formula, right? It's not like you can go to the Word of God and it's going to say, Wanda, this is the way you go. But what happens, I believe, is as you read the Word and as you study and really get your relationship closer to God, He will show you that your purpose will, it will unfold for you because you're searching for it, you know, and you've come to realize that He is the one who is going to show it to you. So it's not cookie cutter. It's not something that the same path for everyone. And that's why it's so important to have this relationship with Christ, not just to go to church, because that relationship is, when you get that close, then you can really hear Him speaking to you and unveiling for you what your purpose individually is.
So these are heady concepts, right? You're talking to kids in school. It's really the meaning of life, right? Putting purpose.
Yes.
So if individuals have unique purpose, why wouldn't that be something that they'd innately know early as opposed to having, is the process of like seeking, like your purpose, is there a point to that? Is there a reason why the seeking of the purpose, or is the purpose only for people who choose to seek it? You know what I'm saying?
So I don't think that it's I think you do have to seek it out. I think that it's not something that you, everybody doesn't find their purpose. You know, some of them, they go off the path and they do the thing that they want to do. And sometimes it looks like it's working, right? I mean, it really does look like it's what you're supposed to do, you know, and it looks prosperous and all of the things. But if you know the word, those things may look good, but they're not God. And so you have to really understand who God is in your life, you know, why you're here, that he really did. He is the creator. He created you. And when you have that type of relationship with him, then you make it. It's not easy, but you recognize that you have to follow his path for your life and not necessarily the world's path, because the world will tell you, oh, you're a great singer, right? But great singers and anointed singers are very different. And so, but you don't know that because you sound great. And so the world is telling you, you sound great. But it's a difference in being just a great singer and an anointed singer, actually having a voice that God has given you, this gift, that this is your purpose. You know, a lot of singers sing, but that's not necessarily their purpose.
So like how is Chloe, or how does a person in general, if they're doing something, singing, they're doing something, it's lucrative, they're making money, it's probably coming with a lot of different things, good and bad, that are attached to it. How do they know if something is godly, or if it's something that's, you know, that's even evil, but that's bringing them like short-term happiness as opposed to some kind of long-term pure good?
Well, I would think that the best way to figure that out, or the best way to see that, is when you do something that's good and it looks good, it feels good, everyone's telling you it was really good, but eventually those things fall off. You know, they don't continue to prosper because they're not God. When it's a God thing, it's lasting, it's everlasting. It'll show not just short term, but long term, and it will continue to prosper because God's things are always growing. You know, not that it won't be some trials and tribulations. Everybody has to go through those, but you will know, because it won't last. The trials and tribulations won't last, and there'll be something that you can still maneuver into and keep moving forward. You know, a lot of times when it's something that's not God, you find yourself, it works for a little while, but then it either falls off, or it stops working, or it no longer serves God. And also, everything that's godly, you can find it in the Word of God. It's not going to be something that's not in the Word of God.
When you say like God speaks to you, and I'm asking questions about this because this is really what your books are about, right? Like, this is the point of the books. And I've interviewed a lot of ministers and people of different faiths. When you say like God speaks to you, like, how does that actually come to you? Because I've heard really different answers for this.
And there are different answers, because again, we're all different, right? So it's not cookie cutter. But for me, and for these books in particular, they were dreams. You know, he came to me in a dream. Writing these books were never my long-term goal. Like, I didn't think about this, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, I'm going to write a book. These are books that God brought to me in my dream. He gave me the title of the book. He told me what the book was supposed to be about. They were dreams that I had, and they weren't things that I was dreaming that I wanted to do.
So, I mean, dreams, you're saying like when you're asleep, like, yes, an actual dream. So a lot of times, like when I have dreams that they're strong in feeling and emotion, and I'm like, oh, what a cool idea for a story. Then when I get up and try to write it down, it doesn't hold up, because like that subconscious logic doesn't necessarily marry with conscious logic. You had the title. Like, how did, like, this is fascinating, right? How did these stories come to you in dream?
I would be asleep, And, you know, he would just start speaking to me in my dreams. I mean, I know nobody named Chloe, you know, nobody. He just, this is just what he told me to do. And then when he tells you to do it, you know, when, if you're obedient to him because you love him and you really believe in God, then you do what he said. And so I started writing. I sought out how to do it, what to do. And he, you know, he helped me to make sure that things turned out the way he wanted it to turn out. You know, I don't know who these books are for, but I believe that because he had me write them, there are a specific group of people that he intended for these books to be for, specifically.
It sounds like God might have a copyright claim against you.
Well, maybe.
So you're saying, you know, you don't know who you're the for. It's God's inspiring you. So in what way is like writing like a mission for you, as opposed to you're just doing something that you had this inspiration for that God inspired you to do? Like, in what, how much of it is purpose driven for you?
Well, all of it is purpose driven now, because it's something that he placed not just in a dream for me, but also now in my heart. So now that it's here, I wanted to work. I wanted to work well. I want to do whatever I can to make sure that it gets into the hands of all those people that he wants it to get into their hands. And so, for me, it's now a desire. And so it pushes me to, you know, want to be better at it, to know more about the whole process of not just the writing, but the publishing, the marketing, you know, the speaking, all of the things is pushing me to do all of these things, because it's something that he put in me, not because it was something that I just decided these were things that I wanted to do.
So for like the plot of this book, was this one that came to you in a dream too, or this was the first one, right? You said?
Yeah, this was the first one. So this started the journey out. So what happens, what he gave me was, I knew when I started this book that there were going to be three, because that's what he told me. And so I knew that this was going to start her journey. She was going to figure out that she needed a relationship with Christ. That's what was missing in her life. And then in the second book, it was very clear to me, because again, this is something that God showed me, that once she decided to allow Christ to be the center of her life, now she was going to have to face challenges, storms, issues, problems in her life. And these issues and the storms and the problems in her life, she was now going to have to navigate them from a Christian standpoint. You know, she wasn't going to be able to handle them the way she would have before she became a Christian. So it's a whole learning process that she was going through as she was learning to be not just someone who goes to church, but someone who really does have a relationship with Christ. So she was taking all her problems back to him and asking him, you know, what am I supposed to do about this? How do I fix this problem? How do I make this work? And once she figured all of those things out, or, you know, because God in the book, the second book, he gave her the answers, how to do the things, or he pointed her in the direction of what she needed to do. Then in the third book, she was able to embrace joy. And then embracing her joy, she realized that joy wasn't really happiness for her. That joy was a deeply rooted spiritual thing. Like it's something that God gives us in the fruit of the Spirit. Joy is. And so you already have it. You know, it's God driven, but you can't. It's there for you because of that. It's not like a happy thing. It's something that's there whether you're happy or not. You know, whether things are going good or falling all apart, you still have joy.
So what is that, what makes us like a Christian category, or what makes it the genre of like Christian fiction? Is it because you're talking about theology and philosophy? But that happens in a lot of books that are not necessarily like, well, I guess, what are the defining elements in your mind that you're placing this, or you're positioning it as a Christian fiction?
Well, because it's Bible based and it's Bible driven. It's lots of scripture in the book, but also, of course, the fiction part is Chloe is completely made up. You know, she's not anyone that I know specifically. I told you, I don't even know anyone named Chloe. So it's definitely that fictional element, but the Christian element is the scripture based, you know, going back to the scripture, going back to God, looking for your answers in the word and finding the answers to the problems, to the issues of life, to the missing piece in the word of God.
So since you're making her from whole cloth, basically, how do you start with the character? You had the name from your dream. Did you have any of the components of her character in mind?
Well, I knew that I wanted to show a spiritual growth journey. So I knew she had to start at a point where she knew of God. She had been in church. She had grown up in church. So she knew of God. But then I needed her to move into not just knowing of him, but actually knowing him. And the only way she was going to do that was to spend time in his word. And so it was a process of growing her in her Christian faith.
So that's a really strong character arc, like an internal arc. But how do you like populate the character with likes and dislikes and character quirks? And like, what's your process with that?
So a lot of that comes in, you know, because again, she's on a job with some people who are not necessarily Christians. And so she has to navigate those relationships in the book as a Christian. So she has to show who she is as a Christian, even in environments where it's not Christian based. You know, I think a lot of people struggle with that because it's easy to show yourself as a Christian who loves God when you're in a church and you're surrounded around a whole lot of other people that have that same feeling. But can you still stand on that and who you are when you're around people who don't have that same thought process? You know, they don't have that same love for God. They just go to church so to check the box that they've been to church, or maybe they don't go to church at all, or maybe they're not Christian, maybe they're a different religion. You know, I mean, you when you go to work, when you go everywhere, the grocery store, the bank, you find all types of people. And so you have to be able to defend your faith, or at least just believe what you believe, no matter where you are or who you're around.
What about your decision to write in first person? Is this how the story came to you, or did you just play with different ways to actually tell it and interact with the reader?
I would say it probably just came to me that way because I kind of struggle writing not in the first person. I'm learning, but it just came to me to write it that way.
I'll give you unsolicited advice. If it comes to you that way and you're comfortable with it, just write that way. Like, there is no one right way to write, and everybody writes in a different way. So if that works for you, don't force yourself into something else. It never seems to go well.
Okay, I'll remember that.
I noticed you also you broke what they call like breaking the fourth wall, like in acting, where you're having her in first person talk directly to the reader.
Yes.
Was that something you started with or came to later? It's an interesting choice because it develops that instant relationship and connection with the reader.
Again, all of this was sort of given to me. I am an avid reader. I love to read, but never had I considered being a writer. So it was just something that sort of came to me. This was how it was supposed to sound. This is what it was supposed to look like.
So what do you read? Like what have you read historically? Is it Christian fiction or is it a variety of things?
A variety of things. Growing up, my favorite genre was probably paranormal or fantasy, romance. I do like mystery. I do like a mystery. I do like adventure. I thought that was it. But recently I've been reading historical fiction. I didn't even know I liked that genre till I read a book about a month and a half ago. I was like, oh, this is interesting. I think I like that. So I picked up another one. So I'm adding historical fiction now to my list of books that I like to read.
I'm curious because you're saying this is your purpose. So for someone who never wanted to be a writer, But obviously, you had a connection to story. Do you remember when that first happened when you were younger?
Well, I don't know exactly, but I know I've always liked reading books. I really like, I don't know, probably in high school, I really liked reading, I think, I guess the first book, the first novel that I can remember that I really enjoyed, and I just, it's probably going to sound weird, but it's called The Shining. It was that, I don't know why, but I was in high school, and that book just, I don't, it was just the mystery of, you know, why he was acting that way. And I don't know, it was just a very, it was a strange book, but it really just sort of set me on the path of just wanting to read more books and just be interested. I just always loved to read.
Well, I mean, you and probably 100 million other people who like that particular book. Did you, Stephen King actually didn't like the movie adaptation of it. Did you see the movie?
I did see the movie, and I wasn't crazy about the movie, but the book I really enjoyed.
Did you go back and read any more of King's books?
No. That was the only one.
So how did, you have this dream, you have this purpose, you feel like this is a mission, this is something I've been told to do. How do you go from not writing to writing? Like, what? How did you learn the craft of writing?
Trial by fire. I don't know. I've always been good at English, you know, so I write all my papers in school and all those things. I've always been a good writer. I've always written extremely good letters. And so it was just, I guess, a natural step into writing.
Did you read books on craft or listen to podcasts on writing or take any courses?
I did not before I wrote these books. But since I've written these books, I have been very interested in now going back and going, you know, taking a class on the craft and really learning the proper way to write. Yes.
There's a bunch of local workshops. We offer some here in book coaches, and there's a Maryland or Bethesda Writers Center. I mean, there's a lot of places in the area. Sometimes it helps. And there's a lot of free content, too, right, through podcasts.
Yes, for sure.
I'm curious, like, having just done this to begin with, like, how long did the first one, Chloe's Missing Piece, how long from start to finish did that take you to write?
Just the writing of it, not the publishing, just the writing?
Yeah, the writing and then the editing, you know, to actually get a finished manuscript that you can then try to publish.
I would say about 6 months.
And what about the other ones? Do they go faster the more you write, or does it never gets much easier, does it?
No. Definitely not easier. The second book was probably about maybe 6 or 7 months. The third book was, the third book is, I guess, my real heart of the story. It's the longest book. It's, and it took the longest. I mean, it was probably a good 9 months. And that was another thing, because this is something that I didn't go to school for, so I really wasn't sure about the entire process. And so when I was writing this third book, it wouldn't end. And I kept saying, why is this book not ending? You know, the other ones, you know, 3 or 4 months and the book was done. And I'm like, why is this book not ending? And again, because it wasn't me, you know, like I said, it was really God downloading and making sure that it was saying what he wanted it to say. And I kept expecting it to end because these ended, you know, these are only about 100 pages, the first two books, but the third book is like 360 pages. And so the whole time I was writing, I kept waiting for it to end and it just wouldn't end. And so, yeah, so it just happened.
When you're right, so you're not planning out the plot then, right? You're just following it as it goes?
Right. I'm not planning out the ending. I kind of know what's happening during the story, what's going to happen. But I never planned the ending. I didn't know how any of them were going to end.
So, you've kind of clearly delineated Chloe's internal arc, right, over these books. Did you have that piece of, like, her spiritual journey in mind, like the overall change within her from beginning to end?
I knew that her spiritual journey was going to, you know, start here and it was going to grow to this, but all the other pieces, you know, how you incorporated the other other characters in the story and the different storylines, the ones at work, the ones with her family, all of those things. They just came as I was writing.
And so when, even as you're putting this together, because you kind of have an idea of where it's going, are you thinking in the term of like acts, like whatever conflict she's facing in each book to start with, and then battling through that conflict in like your second act, and then resolution in your third act? Like, do you think of that like sort of a classic story structure, or does that sort of form later as you're editing?
It formed later. Yes, especially in the first book. The second book, I think I figured that needed to happen, but the first book I didn't. So that happened, forming the things, the tragedy and the things that were going to happen in that book. And I had to, I didn't figure that out until I was getting closer to the editing piece, because I didn't know.
So because this is probably different for you than a lot of authors, since you feel like this, this comes from God and it's your purpose. When you go through that 6 months of writing, and then we can talk about the publishing process. When you go through all this, you finally get the book and this box of books shows up. Tell us what that feels like when this thing, because it's not just you, right? It's something you feel like you've been called to write.
Right. So it's an absolute amazing feeling to hold a book in your hand that was a blank piece of paper, and you actually wrote every word in that book. It's an amazing feeling.
And what about the books that came after that? Did it replicate that feeling, or was the first one special?
The first one was special, but the third one for me was more special, because for me, I didn't feel like an author after I wrote the first book. I didn't feel like I was really an author, that I could call myself an author, until I finished the third book. I don't know if it was because it was the end of the series and I finished it and it actually had an ending, the whole story had an ending, or I don't know. I just didn't feel like I was a real author after the first book. So the third book probably had the most meaning to me when I opened that book up.
If it makes you feel better, I've interviewed hundreds of authors in various formats around the country. I've never met a single author who didn't have imposter syndrome at some point, where they're like New York Times bestsellers who have 100 million books in print, and they're like, this is the one where everyone figures out I'm an imposter. This is the one that ruins my career. Like they all, everyone gets that. So it doesn't get any better.
Oh, gee, thanks, Jeff.
So let's talk about your process a little bit. Were you writing every day when you were putting these books together? Well, what's that practice look like?
Well, for me, it was like a work week. That's what I came from, working for the federal government. I worked Monday through Friday, so I wrote Monday through Friday. And it was just about 2 hours a day. That was it. I don't know if that's taking my time, or I don't know. My brain couldn't take more than that. After about 2 hours, I had to walk away from the computer.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. Your brain is uses more calories than any other organ in your body, and thinking really tires people out.
Absolutely.
Like I think it's Dean Koontz writes like 8 to 12 hours a day. Oh. But other than him, he's like this outlier, right? But other than him, most people write about 2 to 5 hours, and they feel like their tank is empty sometime in that amount of time. And so did you say I'm going to write for 2 hours, or was it a word count or page count, or did you just sort of write until you were done?
It was 2 hours. When 2 hours was up, however many pages it was, that's what it was for that day.
And when you take off the weekends, when you come back on Monday to start, is it hard for you to restart your brain or your creativity, trying to remember where you were and what was happening, so you just get complicated? Or had you been thinking about it all weekend and you were and it was just flowing out of you because you had to break the dam?
Yeah, it was just flowing out of me. It was absolutely something that continued to flow. As long as I stuck to the plan, I didn't write Saturday and Sunday, and I picked back up on Monday morning, it was an easy flow. Now, if I took a few extra days off, then yeah, it was like, okay, now I need to go back and read and figure out where I am and what's going to happen. But if it was just the weekend, no.
And what did you write in? Did you do this with pen and paper or on a computer or what?
Computer.
And did you use writing programs, any kind of software, just write in Word?
Writing in Word.
Have you ever tried like Scrivener or any of these other writing programs?
Nope.
They're pretty fun. And do you listen to music when you're writing?
I will listen to instrumental music, yes. I can't listen to words. Just
Christian music, traditional classical music? What would you listen to?
Sometimes it was Christian music. Sometimes it was R&B. I mean, just as long as there were no words, I was okay. I couldn't have any words.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like it gets into your head. Do you write based on like what you're writing in the book? Does the music have to match? Like if you're writing something exciting or tense, does the music have to be like that, or does it matter?
No, for me, the music is just dead space in the background. That's all.
And then, so you're done. Was it 6 months for the entire for Chloe's Missing Piece? Was that for the entire writing, like first drafting and editing, or was that just the getting the first draft on paper?
No, nope, that was the editing process as well.
And what is that process with you? Like when you finish the draft, okay, I have a first draft done. Now I have to fix it. Like how do you go back and evaluate the manuscript?
So when I started out, I had a publisher. Originally, and so when I, because of course, this process was completely new to me, and so for Chloe's Missing Piece, I finished writing and I handed it over to my publisher's editor, and then she sent it back with the changes. I made the changes, and I sent it back, and she sent it back again, and then that was it. It was done.
Who is the publisher for this?
So. I started out with, it was Goshen Publisher, and so she helped me write this book, and she helped me write book number two. But then after that, I went back, and I pulled the books back and self-published them myself. And that's another reason why book number three is so, so much my baby, because book number three was the one that I wrote, and In book number three, my editor was my sister and my daughter. That's it. My daughter's an English major, and my sister knows everything. So that's it.
So we have a lot of writers who listen to this podcast. So did you, when you finished, you said, okay, well, now I have to get this thing published. Did you try to go out and get an agent? Or like, what was your process with how you're going to get this book into the world?
I went to Amazon. And that was how my publisher originally published it. So when I went back to republish them, I just went to Amazon and I published them through KDP.
I mean, the original book, when you went out to, how did you find this publisher and what was that process like? And did you try to get a literary agent first to get into Big Five Publishing, or did you, how did you
okay.
find them?
So no, this publisher of Goshen Publisher, she's a friend of mine. She has her own publishing company, and she was someone who I had been watching on social media for years build her publishing company up. And so when God told me to write these books, I'm not going to say he sent me to her, but I went to her because I knew she was someone who had done this multiple times, had several books published. And so I just talked to her. I told her what, about my dream and what God said, and she said, okay.
And did she do other like Christian fiction, or is her publisher doing everything?
Most of the books that she published are Christian books or some type of Christian fiction books. Some are not entirely, but most of them are.
And so I'm curious, like when you're, especially now, because you've done both, you've done this, the traditional publisher, how much when you were with her for those first two books, like how much marketing did you have to do, or how involved were you with trying to get the book into the hands of readers?
100% involved. And I think that was one of my issues. I didn't know, but in my mind, I felt like publishers' jobs were to market your book. They were supposed to help you. They were supposed to have places that you could go. You could set up and sell your book. Places where you could go and talk about your book, different book signings. That was what I thought happened. I don't know if that's not what happens with everybody else, but that was not my experience. I was ending up finding all of the book signings and the places where I set up my table and sold books. I was finding all of those things. And so I felt like, I'm giving her a cut of my book. Everyone that sells and... She's the real, I mean, yep, she helped me publish it, but I did pay for that. So why is she still getting paid when she's not doing anything else?
So it's a hybrid model where you're paying for the publisher, and then they're also taking a percentage of royalties.
Correct.
Yeah, that's painful.
Yes. So I had to, you know, very gracefully, you know, sort of back out of that. That made me go and just publish it myself with Amazon.
Did you use, why Amazon as opposed to going wide? Are you in like Kindle Direct publishing so that people can read it with a membership?
Yes, I am in that as well. Because, you know, this is all I knew, and this is how she had published them through Amazon as well. And so that was what I did. I'm learning this process as I go. And so that was how I learned. And so that's what I did.
It was Kindle Unlimited. That's what I meant to say. But yeah, Kindle Unlimited, that readers get it through the subscription process.
Yes.
But it's like 70 to 80% of all books are read on Amazon. And so when you're in that, it gives you this, I think there's like 30 million people or something. It's in that pool. So it does give you a lot more exposure. What have you found that works to get people to try your book?
Well, I think for me, it seems like I sell my books better when I'm in person with my books set up on the table. I haven't had as much good fortune with Amazon as I would like. And I don't know if it's because I haven't figured out the correct formula yet, or I'm not sure what the problem is.
It's a lot of keywords and the right categories and staying on top of it.
Yes.
Do you do any advertising now that you're basically you're your own publisher?
Yes.
So are you doing like Amazon ads or BookBub ads or any kind of paid advertising?
So yes, I have done some Amazon ads.
Those are hard, aren't they?
Yes. I'm still, again, trying to figure all of that out, but I did try it. It didn't seem to work very well for me. I haven't done BookBub yet, but that is on my list, and I want to try the Goodreads ad too.
There's a Goodreads giveaway too that some people do. Yeah, it can reach a lot of people. So what was it that surprised you the most about this writing process? Because reading something, I mean, everyone's read books, you know, and so many people think they can write a book. Well, when you actually did it yourself, what was it that kind of stood out as being harder or easier than you'd anticipated?
Definitely the marketing. I think that when, again, this was a dream. So when God gave this to me, I didn't know that marketing the book, talking about the book, going to book events, I did not know that those were going to be part of the process. Because for me, I've read books all my life, but I wasn't in the book world. So I wasn't going to author events or anything like that, having my book signed by authors. I wasn't doing any of those kind of things. And so I didn't know that was going to be such a huge part of this whole author journey.
How often do you go to these book festivals or conferences?
Right now, I usually have at least 2 events every month.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And is it weird having people that you don't know, like reading your books and talking about your characters?
Very.
What does that feel like?
it's a weird feeling because I feel like they're so, like they know the character better than I do. You know, they're like, did you, and when she said this and when she said that, and I'm thinking, that was 3 books ago. I have to stop and try to remember exactly what they're talking about. So it's interesting.
I think especially in traditional publishing, the road is so long, and it can take, you know, a year to finish a book, and then it can take a year to find an agent, and then it can take 2 years to get it on bookshelves. So a lot of times when you're at these events with a new book that came out, you wrote it like 3 or 4 years before, and you've written 5 books since.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, When you're writing like a series like this, you're with the same character. I know you had the mission for this particular series. Did you, as you were writing it, or now, did you have the urge to write other things to get away from your character? Because it's like a double-edged sword, right?
Right. It is. And so my plan or my thought is I do have a plan for a fourth book, and what I would really like to do is take one of the characters that's in this book and, you know, flush her story out. That's my plan. So I'm kind of going away from Chloe, but not necessarily. I'm going to, you know, just use one of the characters in her book. That's my plan.
So that's a really common plan with authors. And then they get stuck in a series that they've been writing forever, and it's lucrative, and their publishers don't want them to get out of it. So they spin off a character, like, as a way to write from somebody else's point of view and sort of do something different.
Yes.
Will this character, will it still be like the same genres, same categories, or will you do something different?
That's a great question. I'm not quite sure yet because I haven't started completely down the road yet. So I'm not really sure if it's going to be a different genre. It may be, just because this character was not one of the one. She wasn't a Christian at the time. So it may be. I'm not sure.
So walk us through that process in your head. You have an idea. You have a character from a book. So you want to take that character. You want to go deeper. What is your process for, like, figuring out what is the conflict? What is the plot? What is the purpose? How much of this are you going to pre-plan before you start writing?
As much as I can. So with this character, again, she was it's the messy coworker in the book, and you know, she's. Her character, in Chloe's story, she was a foster kid. And so my first idea and thought is I need to really build up that what happened, you know, why she was a foster kid, what happened while she was in foster care, why, how much of that impacts how she is and who she is. And so that's pretty much as far as I've gotten, but that's my plan. And I want to build it out where she's done the foster care. She's come out of that. Now, again, she's working with Chloe. So she has this amazing job. So it worked for her. Like, she was one of the lucky ones to come out of the foster care system with such a great job and being able to take care of herself and all the things. And so I wanted to, but I want to tell the foster story part in a way that is as real as possible.
So will you do research for that? Will you talk to people who are in the system now? I mean, because these things change too, right? Stuff that was true 10 years ago may not be true now. How will you get that foster care system story out?
So that is absolutely my plan. I want to go to some agencies, talk to some caseworkers. I want to talk to some people who have actually been in the system and how it worked for them. I want to go through those things. So I just have a, you know, a genuine idea of how to write the story.
And so will you self-publish that too? Because it's tangentially a part of this story. So will you just continue that with your series?
Probably.
So you have books here for sale, correct?
I do.
So after we finish up here, we'll be signing.
Yes, plenty, I hope.
Is this fun in front of people, talking about your characters, or is it a little daunting?
Well, I wouldn't call it fun. But it's something that I am hopefully going to get very comfortable with.
Well, this has been really fun. I really enjoyed chatting with you. I'd like to ask everybody, if you would, just go on Amazon and rate her book. She's got them up here. You can buy them. If you don't get the book on Amazon, you can just put a line in your one or two sentence review saying that you had an advanced reader copy or that you bought it in person. And it just really makes a difference. If she can get a bunch of reviews up here, it will certainly help when other people look at it. Thank you guys all for coming. If you like what we're doing here at Elaine's, please give us a review to Open Table, Google, wherever you want to do that. And come back and see us. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well done.
I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.